It was supposed to come out last Friday, and it didn't. Josh called us at 2 a.m. and cried for an hour. It was so weird.
Guys, TJ Maxx isn't coming out.
Doing that thing?
That thing.
Or we roll for host?
That roll for host.
10.
Hello, show dog. 10.
Ooh. 7.
Ooh,
okay, reroll, yo.
Rolling again.
7.
17.
Oh, damn.
Blow.
You left me hanging. I was in suspense.
I know. That was the idea. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Escort Mission. This is our podcast. We're the three of us. I am Mike, and I'm with Chaz and Josh. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
We are we're doing that thing where we get together once a week-ish and talk about stuff. So in order to begin that stuff, Chaz, why don't you start us off? What's been going on with you?
Not much. I really haven't
done Josh,
that much this week.
Dude.
What'd I do? So one thing that I want... So games-wise, I really haven't done like almost anything. I played more XCOM. XCOM continues to be really good. Don't neglect your interceptor infrastructure, because you will get screwed if you do that. And I totally ran into that. And fortunately, I have been... I mean, maybe it's one of those things where if you neglect in one area, I think it might be one of those games where you can't really generalize. You can't be jack of all trades, because you'll do everything kind of badly and get screwed. So I happened to be basically completely ignoring so you
basically
have like
completely?
you have interceptors
kind of, generally.
That, on occasion, I would
non-specifically.
In part. There we go. So anyway, you have interceptor fighter aircraft that you station around the world, and if you have satellite coverage, then you can see UFOs and you can scramble these interceptors to you know, shoot them down, and then you can send your teams in. And they're basically like interstitial missions that aren't part of the main plot, but you can get resources, and if you're really good, you can stun enemies instead of shooting them and collect whole weapons, like active weapons instead of weapon fragments. So anyway, you can do that stuff. If you have these interceptors, I had not been putting any resources into them pretty much at all. And so now it's at the point where I kind of need to have them and I don't. And instead of getting totally fucked by that, I was putting all the resources into other stuff like satellite infrastructure. And so I can use the satellite. Because if you basically what I have to do is just ignore the ones that I see. And so, you know, the countries then go, what the fuck? You're ignoring me. Like, aliens. Fucking aliens, you guys. And so...
Sirs, Chaz.
Yeah. But fortunately, I have like, robust satellite infrastructure, so I can launch satellites, which placates them. And they're like, okay, you are taking care of me. So I think that if I did a little of both, I might have gotten screwed. But because I did kind of only one of those... Game's all about choices. Anyway, that
game
is
good. So it sounds more like a relationship management game.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make sure that, you know, all your hoes are taken care of, and they get mad if you don't send them interceptors or
I've
something.
Got interceptors in different area codes.
Oh, nice.
Or Xbox as a dating sim.
Yeah. And it's called XCOM.
It's big in
XCOM,
Japan.
So there's that. I got really into Tom Waits this week. You guys know Tom Waits? You know, of
he's
Tom
a guy
Waits.
That
I know of Tom
sings,
Waits. He's got a gravelly voice.
Super gravelly voice. I want to recommend
he's gargling glass.
A few Tom Waits songs. He's like a singer and actor. It's kind of interesting. He's
yeah, I've seen him in something.
He's in several movies.
Yeah, okay.
He's in...
Does he play like a drunk musician, pianist dude?
No.
Oh.
But, well, so the one movie that I know that he's in specifically is Mystery Men, which is the movie about shitty superheroes with Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo. Like, Janine Garofalo is the bowler, and William H. Macy plays a guy called the Shoveler, whose superpower is to shovel incredibly well. It's actually, like, it's a bad movie, but it's one that I kind of have a soft spot for in the It's not like so bad it's good. Even
it's a good bad movie.
Yeah, it's a good bad movie. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty goodly bad. At one point, Ben Stiller, someone says, "Oh, do you have a Harley?" And he's like, "It's a Harley compatible. It's a Harley compatible." Anyway, so Tom Waits is in that, and he plays a guy who owns a chicken. But Tom Waits, the singer, I got into Tom Waits music, and I just listened to a huge like 100-song YouTube playlist of Tom Waits while doing work this weekend, and he's really good. I mean, you have to be in the mood for like some super gravelly, mostly depressing music, but if you are in that zone, Tom Waits is the way to go.
So why were you in that zone, I wonder? Or did it put you in the zone? Did you want to be in it?
I wasn't feeling super depressed, but I was in the mood for that kind of music. Like, I just needed something. Weirdly, I was doing work, but I was doing work that was more like creative oriented rather than like analytical. So we're, you know, usually I can't do work unless I unless the music. I can't do work while listening to music if
with
the music
lyrics,
has
right?
lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So
now, I was just wondering, is all of his, are all of his songs just like the piano loungy single, or is
no.
there's more band like kind of stuff?
I'm gonna Full recommend band? So he started doing like piano lounge gravelly, you know, with kind of with a sense of humor, poking fun at like kind of deconstructing that genre, right? And so one of the songs I wanted to recommend is called "The Piano Has Been Drinking," which is just super funny. And I'll post in the show notes a YouTube clip of him doing it on one of these like 70s talk shows that's like super scripted. It's one of those, you know, like Conan and Letterman and Leno are all basically scripted, right? You know, mm-hmm. you go and you talk to a segment producer and they say, okay, what stories are you going to tell? Here's what Dave is going to cover, blah, blah, blah. And they basically lay out the whole segment. It's not literally scripted, but everybody knows what everybody's going to say. And they do a pretty good job now of kind of covering up for that and making it feel natural, but they still do it. This was when they did not have any shot at covering it up. And it was just like totally obvious that it was literally written. And so he's on one of those shows, and it's kind of funny just to see that. But he sings a song called "The Piano Has Been Drinking," and it's in my mind, it's the same guy from Piano Man, who, yeah,
that's what I was thinking,
Billy Joel.
It sounds like a parody of Piano Man.
It's
something.
That guy like 6.5 hours later, by the time that it's like, you know, like 3:45 in the morning, and he's just like plastered beyond belief, and the only people left in the bar are severely alcoholic. Like, I just want to think that it's you know, there's a through line between those two songs, but that one's really good. There's another song that is called "God's Away on Business," which is kind of like polka-inspired, fully orchestrated, full band. And then there's another one, which is really, really good, called "Hell Broke Loose," which is kind of an anti, like a war protest song. And that's like electronica. Like, they're all three of those are very different musically. He's got a broad range.
Like, it's literally synths and sampled stuff?
Like, super sampled, like Nine Inch Nails-esque.
Like, from what year?
What do you mean? Oh, when did he do it? I don't know. A couple years
really?
Ago. Really? Fairly recently.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And it's got an awesome video, too.
That's insane. I never
would
have guessed
that. Yeah,
I'd
like to hear that.
I would like to hear that.
Yeah. Maybe we can play it after the show. Anyway, okay. That's good. Tom Waits is really good. And so I listened to like 100 songs.
What suggested or what led you to him? Like, why did you listen to Bob?
On the topic of like being in the mood to listen to Tom Waits, right?
Uh-huh.
My theory is that we crave in media emotions that we aren't experiencing much of in real life.
Mm.
Like, if your life is full of stress, you know, you want to like go home and watch like shitty TV, you know, you just want to turn on
bad TV, friends,
comfort
right?
food.
But if your life is like relaxed, like my parents just retired, they just went and watched like Taken and Taken 2 and were telling me how awesome they were. I was like, are you serious? You know,
your dad has a very specific set of skills.
Yeah, they you know, they have like no stress in their life now, so they're all about the fucking action packed like thrillers and stuff now.
Is there any less likely ass kicker guy than Liam Neeson? How did Liam Neeson become super fucking ass kick machine?
But you've seen that movie Taken,
yeah.
right?
He pulls that shit
off. He's a goddamn badass. But
I
like,
know.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
He's like a middle-aged, 50-something, like cute British guy. I just remember him from what's the
he's
the British
in Star Wars, right?
I guess he's in. Maybe that's where it started. But
yeah.
He was in like Love Actually, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's just like a relatable older guy. Yeah. And now he's like, I'm fucking kicking ass all over the world.
He's also
he was in the A-Team.
He's also really funny. Like, he is great at deadpan humor. Like, he was on one of Ricky Gervais's projects, and he was with Stephen Merchant.
So good.
And he like just comes in and like talks to them at a desk for 5 minutes.
He's
and
got like terrible movie ideas or something.
Yeah, he had terrible movie ideas.
And they're like really bored by him and want to get rid of him.
But it was genius. Yeah.
Was it an episode of Extras?
It wasn't Extras.
No, it was their new show where they don't really star in it.
No. It's with Willow. It's with Willow Ofgood.
Oh, yeah.
What's his face?
Life's Too Short.
Yeah, yeah. It was an episode of that. Yeah.
Cool. Cool.
Which is kind of a weird show.
It was the best episode of that show. It was the one you should watch.
Right. But it was mainly because of him. That was basically one of the funniest things ever. Anyway.
There's a cool BBC article that I read about the psychological hook of Tetris and why we like it.
Yeah. Apparently, why you really, really like it?
Why I really love it. The game's ability to continually provide a new frustrating piece to deal with, followed by the gratification of putting that piece in the right spot. That's what's appealing. It's something called the Zeigarnik effect, which is the mind's ability to better recall incomplete tasks and therefore hunger to complete them, which I thought was fascinating. I'm like, oh.
So basically,
that's why I drool.
It's like a steady drip of.
It's like frustration solution. Frustration solution. Yeah, yeah. Frustration solution. Like,
right.
It's the shortest possible feedback loop for that, like, I'm screwed. I'm smart. I'm screwed. I'm smart. You know?
Right.
So that was cool. I want to recommend the Penny Arcade D&D process, which I mentioned to you guys. I wanted to bring up many shows ago and then continued to forget to do. Penny Arcade have been recording a long-running D&D campaign. The first couple episodes are audio podcasts, but it's Gabe and Tycho from Penny Arcade, Mike and Jerry, and Will Wheaton and Chris Straub. The other one, he does one of the webcomics.
The PvP
kind of,
guy, right?
Yeah, the guy from PvP.
Yeah.
Maybe it is Chris. No. Anyway. Yeah, oh, Scott Kurtz.
Scott Kurtz.
Scott Kurtz, right. Yes. It's those four.
And Chris, and it's not Chris Straub?
It's not Chris Straub, no.
Oh, okay.
It's those four guys doing a D&D campaign, and it is, it's campaign, the Dungeon Master is the guy who's like Chief Dungeon Master for Wizards of the Coast, formerly TSR. He's like the guy who builds D&D essentially and is like the preeminent dungeon master in the world. So
nice.
It's just like super fun. They're super funny going through the whole thing. First two episodes are audio. Those are cool to listen to. And then since then they've been doing it every PAX they do like another hour to 2 hour long show. And they're now like huge live stage events with, you know, 1,000 people in the theater living and dying on every dice roll and stuff. It's really fun. So I just watched the latest episode of that from the last PAX. That was cool. And then finally I did all my voting. I finally sat down. I've had that shit staring at me from the coffee table.
Looked up all the damn California props.
Though. Oh yeah, totally. And what I wanted to recommend about that is ballotpedia.org. That site is the greatest. Oh my God. That is the only way to go about doing your voting. It's a wiki for ballot measures. Basically, it's the wiki of American democracy, right? So you click on, it has a U.S. map. You click on your state. It has all the ballot measures, you know, everybody who's running for whatever state office. You can get, you know, bios on everything. It has the full text of the voter pamphlet. And then it has, you know, for example, for each proposition on the California ballot, it has the text of the actual proposition. It has the pro and con text out of the voter pamphlet, and then it has the list of all the campaign donors above a certain threshold. So it'll have like everyone who donated more than $10,000 to the yes or to the no campaigns for the proposition, which is incredibly valuable information. It's so cool that that's available, and then it also has. Both excerpts from and links to all the newspaper editorials about each one. It's such a great resource. Nice. I'm so glad that exists because it's actually the thing that I use the most from that are the newspaper editorials, because that's a very, very quick way to understand basically who's supporting what side of any of those things. It's really cool.
Wiki's fucking rule for like, you know, information gathering and consensus building.
Yeah. And it's kind of the the joke about Wiki anything is like, oh, you know, anytime somebody mentions, you know, I read this on Wikipedia, everybody, like two other people in the conversation are guaranteed to go, so you know that's true. You know, somebody's always going to make a joke about how unreliable it is.
I fucking hate those people.
Which is so wrong. Like, it's actually very reliable. Yes, anyone can edit it, but... And so if you happen to go...
Yeah, have you ever tried to, like, screw up an article on Wikipedia?
It gets corrected so fast.
Like, faster than you finish it. Those people are fucking vultures. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely, yeah. And basically what you know is that the people who really care about any given article are on that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And they will change it back, you know,
they
stuff.
They have text alerts ready, you know.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Agreed.
Ballotpedia.org. I really like it. That was very useful.
Good link.
Yeah, that's all I did. I like it a lot. I did that, and I raised a 2.5-year-old.
Oh, whatever. That's boring. All right, moving on. Just kidding. No good anecdotes from that activity? Ongoing game?
That will I do not have
never end until you die?
I just have exhaustion. All I have is exhaustion from doing that. He's in his terrible twos, which are not really that bad. He's been pretty good.
I mean, he's not, like, you know, murdering animals or anything disturbing like that.
No, he hasn't, you know... cut part of the cat's tail off.
Well, that's fascinating, Charles. Thank you for that insight on your life. Good to hear. Josh?
Yeah, things. I'll talk about non-game things first. I didn't prep you guys for this, but I was thinking about a new segment, and we don't have to make this a whole new segment, but I'll just make it part of my talk this week.
Okay.
Because I have a fucking meme of the week. God damn, that sneeze costume...
The guy's head.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Down. That is like my favorite thing in the universe. That is the best costume I've ever seen in my life.
Now keep in mind that this is a day when I linked you the guy wearing the baby as the robot.
No,
from
that
Alien.
Was good. So that could be your meme of the week if you want.
Is it really a meme though? Like, I don't know what you mean by meme.
Meme means anything shared on the internet.
So
that's good.
So it basically means nothing.
It means
what you're
saying. Yeah. It means. Everything.
It's a useless term now. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, so I think memes very technically is supposed to mean something that propagates in the minds of the people who perceive it.
I know. I usually
think... like an earworm that can jump from person to person, like in the song where you sing it and you cause somebody else to sing
it. Yeah. And I usually think of a meme more as something that like is almost more template-ish that like. Cries out to get modified and personalized and
I think that
done
is...
in a slightly different way to make it your own, whereas that is just an awesome Halloween costume.
You know what? If you want to argue about the definition of RPG indefinitely, you know, go ahead.
I was just talking about memes and RPGs.
There's an article about that today, I think, maybe on Kotaku or something. I just didn't have the patience for that shit. We all know what we mean when we say it's got RPG aspects. It means it's got fucking XP... and leveling up abilities and, you know, skill points or talent slots and, you know, shit like that. When I say meme, I mean fucking links that we share. You know what I mean?
Like, just give me a hard time.
You can do your college thesis analysis of the definition of meme.
All right.
You know, and maybe that's more
little
accurate.
Defensive.
Anyway.
Wow, I think that's a meme now, actually. Getting defensive about people, getting defensive about the use of the word meme.
A defensive meme.
I just over-memed you.
Oh, I punched the guitar.
Sweet!
I mean...
you didn't do it last time.
Oh, yeah. We went for one show without my doing it.
Just in case you don't have one on the top of your head, Mike, one of my runners-up is Sai. You know, why were you so mad at that ass? Because her ass was
so mad. Yeah. Actually, no. On that topic, I will say Infinite Gangnam Style is my choice of... cool internet
is that
thingy.
Like 10 hours Gangnam Style video on YouTube,
so it's really sweet. You know, I'll bring after you finish, remind me, I'll talk about it because it's actually kind of technically interesting.
Okay,
but, all right.
I'll make a note. To describe this costume more fully for people.
Oh, you haven't seen this picture?
No, I've seen it. I'm saying for listeners.
Right.
To explain, we're gonna have
all
to
of
link
you out
it.
There.
We will definitely link it,
but basically, it's a guy who's just wearing clothes, he kind of looks kind of like a priest, and he's kind of wearing a black jacket and a white collar. And then he acts like he's about to sneeze, and when he sneezes, he thrusts his head downward so hard that it looks like it falls off, like, through his, like, you know, down in front of his chest. What he's actually doing is thrusting his head down, you know, through like a slot in the costume where the shoulders must have some kind of like a structure or skeleton holding them up. And because it looks like he drops his head into his hands.
Into his chest, yeah.
When
he's
sneezing.
It's quite impressive.
That's cool.
It's amazing.
And then the one I mentioned briefly is a guy in a suit that looks like... So the suit is the the height of a man, and it looks like the suit that Ripley fights the Queen Alien in Aliens 2.
The big yellow mech.
The big yellow
exoskeleton. The long arm claw
thing. Loader thing, yes. Yeah. Except in place of Ripley, scaled down is... that person's baby, like, sitting in the control for the chair, and then that, like, obviously in, like, a baby Bjorn on the front of him with the whole suit
right.
built out around it. Yeah,
with like, a neon light
the
above
light,
the baby's
yeah,
face.
It's really good.
It's amazing. Yeah. So I watched Luther this week. It's a British
BBC
detective show on Netflix, and it's quite good. It's like
heard this.
It's like Dexter, except you know, it doesn't have the same gimmick of the star being a serial killer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like halfway between Dexter and one of our traditional American crime drama series,
like
Law CSI,
and Order,
or
CSI
or Homicide, okay. Right. SVU, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Right. It's just really well executed. It's pretty gory, and it's real serious, and it does mostly wrap up. You know, stuff at the end of every episode, it seems a little more so than you might hope, but it is very, very good. I recommend it.
Cool.
Man, I just wanted to mention real quick, I watched some more Top Gear. Top Gear is like the best thing. Top Gear is unbelievable. There's so much of it. There's fucking 17 seasons of it or something.
Jesus.
Yep.
It's all on Netflix.
It's like the Simpsons of cars.
It is such an institution and Britain, but now everywhere else too. I think everyone in the world that likes cars respects that show so much because it's just edited so well, has such a high budget. The guys are generally pretty funny.
No show gets across the enthusiasm that car guys feel about driving cars better than Top Gear. Like, American car programs suck balls for that. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but like, the Nashville network, TNN, that turned in eventually to Spike, has like some car shows on like Sunday morning. And they've got like, you know, I Can Build Cars, but they had one called Car and Driver TV. And Car and Driver is like a pretty well-respected, decent car magazine, but it was so dry. That show was so dry.
It's
it was
a little
like,
bit more like Consumer Reports.
It was totally, yeah, it was like, just like watching an, like, what a TV version of Consumer Reports magazine would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like a video, a tracking shot of a car doing a 0-60, just like driving in a straight line.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
And Top Gear is so good.
Top Gear is Car and Driver with a soul.
Yeah.
You know, and an opinion. Man, it's really, I just had to mention it again. It's so good. Fucking Polygon launched this week. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
New game blog by
The Verge.
You know, journalists pilfered from all kinds of different companies.
It's
and,
like the super gaming,
and it's the one associated with
it. It's like it's the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young of gaming publications. Just like The Verge is the, I don't know, name another super group. Oh, the Traveling Wilburys of tech reporting.
I only start...
That's a good fucking poll. Traveling Wilburys,
I'm sure,
you guys.
That's what they want to be known as.
It was Bob Dylan,
Tom Petty,
like Ringo, maybe?
Jeff? No.
I don't know.
Other people.
I only started...
Other musicians.
I only started following it this week, even though it was...
I couldn't find their RSS feed.
It was
I feel bad. I couldn't find it.
I just pasted...
Oh, it was just domain.
Polygon.com into Google Reader,
yeah,
and Google finds it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can go into Google and copy it out.
Right.
Even though they've been doing content at Verge/gaming or whatever, I only started following it this week. It's all right. It's not, like, crazy impressive. I think it's pretty good. You know, we'll see if my opinion changes. I like it better than Kotaku because I kind of hate Kotaku's content now.
Yeah.
But I still find Destructoid's, like, blatant, like, irresponsibility refreshing, you know? So I still kind of maybe like Destructoid better, but I'm not sure.
I'm totally a Destructoid hipster. I really, really like them when they were nobodies. I fucking hate that they're, like, super legitimate. now.
They're still not really that super legitimate.
Okay, they're the bad boy. They're like Kotaku, except they embrace their outsider nature, but they still have always wanted to be legitimate, and they didn't used to be. And
tell me how their content has gotten worse.
No, well, for one, their website is a fucking, like, horrible mess, and I hate it.
Who goes to their website? Come on.
Well, everybody goes to their website. To read a story. Like, you know, they totally got that issue where, like, the content is surrounded by, like, 90% of, like, ad and bullshit that you don't care about reading.
If you read it in an RSS feed, tell me how their content has gotten worse.
No, I'm not saying... I'd never said their content got worse.
Oh, then brilliant. We agree. It's fantastic. Moving on.
That site is not fantastic. I'm totally not on the Destructoid train. I do not like Destructoid at all.
Well, see, I'm totally different from you guys. I just read everything. I don't just narrow it down to like two places to
That's
get
because you do no work.
I just but it doesn't matter. Like you're saying you can't read more than like two sources.
There's no way I could keep up with Kotaku and Destructoid now anymore. Those sites are way too.
You're just not good at reading efficiently. Those, that's
Kotaku
what you
is like 50 posts a day. It's ridiculous.
And you hit K.
Both of those are
K, and you read
it
the headline.
So
you move
long
on.
Just to read the headlines for those two.
You're not as good at it as me. That's what you're saying.
They're too. What's the right word? Is it prolific?
Yeah,
they're too wordy. Yeah. They post too many.
They have a lot of junk. That's true.
One thing I wanted to bring up about Polygon is their review process. I'm totally in love with their review process. They posted the way that they do video game reviews. I think this is so good and should be embraced by like everyone else who does reviews. So, for a long time, you know, whether or not games should. Anything that you review should get a number or like a number of stars or thumbs ups or whatever. Like that has been debated in just criticism in general for a long time. And whether it's cheapening the review or, you know, people, you know, don't want to read the whole review if they just go to the number, et cetera. Right. I think they have hit on a great way to handle this. So they do have a number associated with their review of the game. However, what they do is they assign the review to a reviewer. That person plays and reviews the game and writes the whole thing. And then that person, along with three other reviewers, after it has been fully edited and is in the form in which it will be published, sit down and they all read the review and decide based on the content of the review what score should be given. I think that is such a great way to go about it, right? So... You know, you potentially the person who's writing it could still have in their mind as they're writing it roughly like, oh, I think I'm going to give this game about a 7. But if what they actually write doesn't justify that score, then three other people are going to be saying, look, you know, if you think differently, go back and rewrite it. But what you've written says that this game should be a 6.5 or something like that. I think that's such a great way to go about it. I totally like that system.
It's pretty interesting. I'm not like a huge fan. I think it's an okay system. I like it.
What would be better?
I'm not saying I have a better system. I'm just saying it's like it's different. If you let a reviewer have full control over the score they're giving something, that's the more traditional way to do it. It's the more logical way to do it. It's like they are the one that played the whole fucking game and tried to evaluate it. And so you'd think that they should have the best ability to score it based on what they think. You know, this is like a weird roundabout process where other people are assigning a number based on what it sounds like that person thought about it, not what that person says they actually think about what they thought. It's a little bit weird. It, you know, it's an okay system. I kind of like it. It's more of a group committee decision. And maybe, you know, what you say about a game says more truth about how you actually felt about it than what you actually think. But then again, maybe what you actually think is what you think. And no matter how much you love something, maybe you're still going to, when you talk to people, you're going to complain about it more than you actually loved it. You know what I mean?
Well, Charles, I mean, does the writer of the review not get a say in what the number is? Or do they give?
They do. They and three other reviewers.
Okay. So they come to a consensus number.
And it's not based on how good the game is. It's based on what they wrote, right? And that's what I like about it. It puts the review, the words of the review, what they wrote about the game first, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like the reviewer, you know, you can never stop the reviewer from sitting down with an idea in their head, like, I think this game is a 7. But what it prevents is from that being the only thing that is thought about. Like, I think this game is 7. I go toss off some words and I still give it a 7 or I still give it a 9 because I just love it. Like, it prevents somebody who's a Super Mario, like a, that's a bad choice of phrase, a super Fuck, I was going to say Super Metroid. That also doesn't work. Somebody who's a big Mario fan from saying, like, just, I give Mario 9.5 regardless, and then writing a review that is actually what they think about the game but doesn't actually justify the score, but giving it that score anyway. Like, there are three other people who are saying, like, look, you, what you've written doesn't actually justify that on our scale.
Yeah, I will say it's interesting that they think that a person can write a review that is often enough not the number they'd give. Like, they think that's, like, the most common thing that would happen. They need, like, oversight,
like, they think it's a, like, pervasive problem in games journalism that there's too much fanboyism or giving a high-budget game a good score just because.
I mean, I think there is.
You know, maybe there's a little of that. Maybe this will reduce that.
Yeah. It's an interesting experiment, I guess.
It is a valid, interesting experiment. Yeah.
Basically, the text that you write should reflect the score and vice versa.
Yeah, if nothing else, what it'll do is it'll encourage the review writers to, you know, be more careful in what they actually write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it'll have this meta effect on future reviews.
And what I like is that knowing that, I feel like it gives the number more credence. It makes the number more relevant to me, because I typically, like, I try not to notice the number if I'm reading a game review, which I admittedly don't do that often. But I try to, like, you know, I literally will sometimes, like, try to cover it with my hand and scroll it off the screen so I can read the text and then go look at the number, because I don't want to have the 9.5 coloring my view of, you know, what is written in the review. I want to read the review, and then, you know, and then if there's a number attached to it, there have been, I know 1UP, for example, got rid of scores for a while. Oh no, EGM got rid of scores for a while. They took out the scores because they thought it was too much of a problem. And then 1UP changed from a number system to a letter grade. They went from, you know, A-, B+, B, right? They, you know, a number of sites have been grappling with this problem because, I mean, it has a knock-on effect, right? Like, Metacritic, there are stories of, games marketers, and PR people having their, like, their salaries and their bonuses and stuff affected directly by the Metacritic scores that they're able to generate, right? And I think it's just such a, I don't think that's good for, you know, the gaming hobby. I want developers simply to be incentivized to make good games, not to garner good review scores.
That almost feels like teaching kids to pass tests.
Right, right,
That's exactly what that feels like, you know.
So part of me, you know, thinks this is a valid, interesting, unique way to do it. But the other part of me is like, you know, although the Metacritic scores determining bonuses seems insane, you know, for game development companies to implement, it is reality.
It seems rational.
And from a...
It just sucks.
Yeah. And although it sucks, it does exist.
Yeah.
And so pragmatically, if you are a games journalist doing reviews, you have to consider the reality in which you're putting your reviews out into.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just, like, say, well, you know, fuck that business. We're going to do whatever we want, mm-hmm. with irregardless of the consequences.
Wow.
Right?
You really just said irregardless.
Fuck you, irregardless.
I can't believe you said that.
Irrespective. Irregardless.
Oh, shit, boy.
Kicking it up a notch. Irregardless.
I mean, you know, whatever system, if they come up with a system that consistently scores like one or two lower than everywhere else, mm-hmm. but otherwise is relatively similar, mm-hmm. then they're like fucking over bonuses for companies,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not what they want to do. They wanted to just make a more fair system that's scaled closer to 5 instead of closer to 7 right. as the middle score, right?
Right, right.
And maybe they think there's a problem with all the scores being centered around 7.
Right.
But just saying we're gonna fucking center this shit around 5 is not necessarily the answer. They're not gonna necessarily fix, you know, or change Metacritic. They're not gonna change Metacritic.
Right.
They're just gonna actually make fewer people get bonuses.
Yeah.
You have to, like, operate in the environment that it actually exists. So to some extent, I want new games review sites to just go, okay, we're scoring 1 to 100 so that we get to control exactly what number goes on to Metacritic, mm-hmm. instead of someone at Metacritic evaluating our review and then trying to correlate some fucking 1 to 100 number to it. I think game sites should all change to a 1 to 100 number so that you know, so that their Metacritic number, their game rankings percentage is actually what they intended and not out of their hands.
Yeah. So I think that that, you know, accepting reality on reality's terms, that's an important skill. However, that argument does also, I mean, to take that to one of these, you know, great rhetorical, you know, farthest possible extremes, you could also say that about, like, the Jim Crow period, right? Like, look, the world's just fucking racist out there. You know, if you should just have a policy that acknowledges racism and, you know, we just have to deal with it. It's the reality of the world. Like, well, no, what if they want to change it? What if they feel like it's a bad system?
It's a fallacy because it's an unfair comparison. It's you know, no one's getting persecuted and by choosing to, you know, design your review system, you're not, you know, disenfranchising anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just pragmatic is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, oh, we live in a racist world, let's all be racist. I'm just saying, you know, this less than desirable thing exists. Designing a new review system probably isn't going to change that at all. If you want to change it, go change it, like, via a campaign, mm-hmm. or, you know, change.org or whatever, or via Twitter madness. Everybody, you know, like we talked about, people on Twitter are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, boycott Metacritic, like, talk to these game development studios, try to get them to change their minds. I don't know.
Yep. Anyway, so
it's like
Polygon.
It's like,
I don't think
it's
Polygon...
like disagreeing with abortion, but still, you know, believing in the right to choose.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Pragmatically, if you outlawed abortion, a lot of people would get abortions unsafely, mm-hmm. and so you want to legalize safe abortion,
mm-hmm.
right? It's
you can, although not anymore, because apparently they don't like that that's happening either. So there's a great Thomas Friedman editorial. I'll link that one too on how you can't really call yourself pro-life if the only thing that you're pro-life about is the abortion issue. It's an interesting one. Always kind of bugged me about that standpoint.
It does baffle me how most pro-lifers are pro-death penalty too.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the most obvious one, but there's lots of things like they're pro-life, but they're ostensibly pro-life, quote unquote, which the only rational way to define that is respect for the sanctity of life, but they are also for, or they would be, you know, against an assault weapons ban, for example, you know, or they're against Head Start programs, stuff like that, right? So anyway, I don't think the Polygon are trying to make that change. That what they have done is designed a system that I feel straddles that line quite well, right? I think they write the review first, and they try to write it without a number in their heads, and then they decide, based on what they've written, what number that review justifies. I think that's a great way to go about it. They still end up with a numbered review. They're not trying to change the Metacritic system or anything. I think it's just a cool new way to approach the problem.
Right.
Yeah. So, cool.
Agreed.
That could have been a main topic, even. We spent so much time on
it. I think
it
just was. It
apparently was.
Emergent main topic. That's what that was.
Nice.
Speaking of all these fucking two wordy game blogs, none of them are covering the DJ Max Technica Tune for Vita postponement.
Wow.
That shit got delayed.
Except for the escort mission.
It was supposed to come out last Friday, and it didn't.
Josh called us at 2 a.m. and cried for an hour. It was so weird.
Guys, DJ Max isn't coming out.
I had to dig through their fucking Facebook feed.
Don't put shit on Facebook, companies. Only on Facebook. Bad idea.
I had to wade through that muck in order to find them saying that it's getting postponed a couple weeks.
And so it just didn't come. It just wasn't in stores, and this is how you found out about it?
Well, first of all, it's literally on sale nowhere,
still,
except their website.
Now, I found a link for it on Amazon, but it's like an import version.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The international version, yes, was released a month or two ago whatever. But it's $80, and you got to import it, and it's in Korean, and it probably won't even run on your Vita.
Mm.
Right?
Nobody buy it with the link that I posted on the show notes for last week.
Sounds like a bad...
Oh, you did that? Yeah. I missed that.
Unless you're Korean and rich.
And have a Region 3 Vita or whatever.
Didn't I say last week how it's not on Amazon?
Yeah, I believe so. But then I found it there, and I was like, what's he talking about? It's totally
there. And he just thought you were an idiot. So.
No, that's not it. No, I thought they had changed. I thought they had put it up or it had come up in the
intro. No, that's not it.
Because it took me a long time
to do the show
notes. You
don't want the import. It won't run on your Vita. Sorry.
Return your copies.
but buy other things from our Amazon links.
Use your refund to buy other things. So it is eventually going to show up on Amazon. It is eventually going to come on to PSN after they actually get the physical copies and start selling them directly from their website. Now, the other crazy part is they said that it's not going to come out on PSN until like a week or two after it's released physically.
Why?
Which is insane. Yeah. I thought the whole Vita thing was about day one PSN releases with physical. Yeah. Apparently not for third parties.
Didn't they actually brand it as something? It's like it's called something. It's
so,
like
yeah, Sony PlayStation... said guaranteed for like for all their first party releases that it's going to be day one. But and then it sounded like what they were doing was encouraging third parties to release on day one. But according to the Pentamax's or Pentavision's like Facebook post or DJMAX whatever Facebook page post, they said it was Sony's fault that it's going to be delayed like 15 days after physical release. Like it was their requirement.
Jerks.
So, man, Sony's are fuck ups. Anyway, moving on. Because I was looking forward to that so much, I had to play a bunch of other rhythm games. So,
you sent me a great text about one.
Yes, I played a shit ton of DJMAX.
Oh, right. Citus. Right?
I played a shit ton of DJMAX Portable 3 on my Vita, which is actually a PlayStation Portable game. That game is consistently the best game ever made for a handheld device.
Wow.
A period.
Strong words.
So Citus also I found, which is on Android and iOS. It's quite good. It's quite good. Did you guys both try it?
I have not tried it yet, no.
I did try it. It is good. Although I feel the music is not that good. I don't think the music is quite up to par.
I did talk to Chaz, and his lack of enthusiasm slowed my conversion rate.
The music is miscellaneous K-pop.
So not Gangnam Style, then.
It's a lot like DJ Max music, except a little bit less inspired.
Yeah.
Choices.
Yeah. Cheaper to license.
A little cheaper to license, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But it still varies in genre dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so you might find some you like more than others. So you should, again, there's...
I've played many of the songs.
There's 30 songs in there.
Probably played, you know, 12 at this point.
And the first 10 are quite different from the second 10 are quite different from the last 10. So, you know, you can jump around. But, yeah, the game is...
As a rhythm game, it's legit. It's solid.
And for fucking free, or $2, one-time fee.
And if a million people download it, they're going to release a bunch of other songs.
Yeah, for every 100,000 or something, they're going to release more, or...
I think what I saw is like once we hit a million, we're going to release a bunch of free songs.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Quality. Check it out. It's all kinds of touching madness. Also looking forward to that. I tried Orgarhythm. It's all right. I don't know. This is the weird Vita game that came out last week. That's like a Patapon except overhead. It's like a strategy simulation game that's actually rhythmic.
It's like an RTS, except you get units by playing a rhythm game.
Yeah. Okay. You go tap, 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 swipe, you know, like on the beat. And your taps choose which color unit and then which type of unit, like melee or archers or whatever. And then, what's the third tap? Fuck. I don't remember. But the swipe is like where you send them and how many dudes. The length of the swipe is how many dudes you send, and then you put the swipe exactly where you want the dudes to be. Mm-hmm. And so when enemies are coming at you, you want to do the opposing color, and then
it's rock paper scissors.
It's like rock paper scissors of
blue beats earth, yellow beats
earth water red. Fire. Yeah. And then similarly, the melee versus range versus whatever. Mm-hmm. Becomes like another rock paper scissors thing on top of that, and you want to get like all excellent timing to like multiply your units and get bonuses and stuff. It's pretty interesting. I probably need to play more.
It's a fun concept for sure.
But initially, it wasn't super intriguing. It's all right. This week though, Assassin's Creed 3, motherfucker, my copy's shipping.
Nice.
Looking forward to it. Also, this past week, I got the Math Magician title on Mass Effect 3 multiplayer.
What does that mean?
It means, like, I'm a fucking tech-bursting nightmare.
Naturally. But Math Magician, it sounds so much cooler.
I know. Doesn't it?
It does.
It's got a really sweet logo with the Omni-tool, like the orange thing.
Yeah.
Man, it's rad.
Is that equivalent to your Biotic God moniker?
It is. Now I got two titles.
Oh, nice. Whoa.
I need like nine
you
titles.
Can get all the titles.
I need like nine titles to get the Uber title.
Oh, what's that?
Or something like that. Like N7 Elite.
Nice.
Something whoa. Like that. Anyway. I played the Mark Ninja demo all the way through. The game's well executed. It's a good game.
Yeah, it is.
I was not super compelled to purchase it immediately. I did play it all the way through one and a half times. So I wanted to see if I could do the leave
it's
everyone
a good demo.
Alive thing.
It's one of the better demos.
It's a good demo.
It really shows off what the game is like.
I don't know. I don't know if I turned into Mike or what, but I've been just playing demos all the way through, saying this is a good game. I don't need to buy it.
See how easy that is?
I know.
Demos are great.
I played the Dust and Elysian Tale demo all the way
great
through.
Great demo.
Man, that's a great demo.
But didn't want to buy it.
That game is really good.
Yeah.
The graphics are fucking sweet 2D drawings.
Animation's great.
It's like Rayman Origins or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a side scroller, like action brawler. You got way more attacks. You're like air juggling dudes with XYY, XXY, you know? Yeah. And it's even got like parries, like counterattacks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has all these RPGing things. You know, you get gear and you upgrade it, you upgrade your stats and stuff. You progress through a big side-scrolling RPG-ish environment, but it's a little childish. Like the story has really kid voices.
It's got the sprightly character that flies and follows you. That is probably going to grate on your nerves at some point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, really well executed. Highly recommended.
Demo, great, free,
good demo.
Excellent. 15 minutes of gameplay. Done. Over. Move on.
Yeah. And then two things I did not get to yet. Closure is on fucking sale for $5 right now on both Steam and PSN, I think. This is a puzzle game that came out a few months ago that I wanted to try on PSN because it wasn't on Steam at the time. It's like I don't know much about it. It's like black and white. It looks really cool. A little like Limbo, but a little like Braid, but not. And only $5, and it got great reviews, so we got to try that shit. And Hotline Miami, I have not tried yet, but I want to try that. That looks brutal as hell.
That looks like some crazy shit.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, that's... Oh, wait, no. I still have to go.
Go.
All right, yeah. Dad, demos are good. I love that Dust demo. That was fun when that happened. Now it's over. So, my meme of the week, Infinite Gangnam Style. All right. So what this is, this guy using like bleeding edge web audio APIs. So like it works in Chrome and Safari and like nothing else or something like that. He basically just loads the Gangnam Style video. And then there's a bunch of tiny little squares like in sort of a grid pattern below it. And as the song plays, like each little grid square lights up as if it was like a sequencer, you know, like an audio sequencer, like playing mm-hmm. beats or something like that. Most of the beats for the first, like, I'd say about minute of the song are black. But at a certain point, you get to other squares that are either blue or purple or red. And what's interesting is that it will literally play the whole song forever. Like, as long as the computer runs and you, oh, we got a bug situation over there, Josh?
This big-ass spider just dropped on me.
Oh, shit. Mid-podcast pest control.
Oh, my God. Oh, I forgot to tell you that we have a new official mascot. Wow.
Oh, damn.
Josh is losing his shit over here. Is it just a spider or something?
Yeah, big ol' one, man.
Did it drop on your face?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Did you get it?
I don't know.
You should sit back down right there.
You should continue to sit there. I don't see a spider guts on that magazine.
I don't see spider guts.
Hey, don't kill it. We need it to kill the flies that we invariably let in occasionally.
Sitting there.
Wow. Okay. Well, we've learned something today.
Josh does not
folks.
Like Josh. No likey the spiders.
All right, spiders are. Well, you know when they drop on you, I have to give them credit. That freaks your shit out. Josh is readjusting his mic mid podcast.
Prepare for some squeaky microphone noises.
Yeah,
I am gonna sit surrounded by white.
Wow, out of context racism on the escort mission. So anyway, Infinite Gangnam Style. So it plays it like a sequencer beat. What happens though is it This guy literally mapped out the whole song as like these little 1 second beats. And when it gets to one of the colored squares, there's a random chance.
Racist.
There's a random chance that it will jump to another point in the song that shares the same qualities as that beat in terms of, like, you know, the loudness or the duration or the, I don't know if it's the instrumentation or whether there's lyrics, like the specific lyric that he's reading or saying or something like that. And so it will basically, it plays this kind of, like, you know, modern infinite version of Gangnam Style that jumps around randomly or doesn't jump around randomly depending on what the algorithm is thinking at the same time. Cool. I don't know. It's kind of genius, the fact that the song is built to even support that kind of thing, and that works.
Well, doesn't, like, basically any pop song do
not
that?
Necessarily. Like, he chose that one because it's super popular, but I think he chose it specifically for its properties. I don't know.
I think any kind of syntho pop
maybe deal but would do that. In the comments on the Hacker News article that had it on there.
How's the spider situation over there, Josh?
The Vita has been flipped, and there are no spiders on it.
I think my gear is clear.
Really? You're sure that bag's not full of spiders?
I'm not positive. Hey, don't get it near me. I don't need your spider shit in my world.
Your couch is fucking infected.
Right.
That thing came from the ceiling, man. It dropped down right next to me.
All right. So,
Gangnam
anyway,
Style.
That's cool.
Infinite Gangnam Style. That's a pretty cool little thing. Robin and I started watching Friday Night Lights again after a long hiatus. Talking about we should really, really watch that show.
Where did you stop?
Good.
Where did you stop?
Well, we stopped only like a few episodes into the first season.
No
so
way.
We didn't make it very far.
Oh, that show's so good. I love it.
Yeah. It's a good show. It's a really good show, even though I really don't give a shit about football.
But it's not about football at all, right?
But it is, and
I mean,
it isn't.
It's about football in the same way that Crimson Tide is about a submarine, meaning it's not at all. That's
right,
just
except
the backdrop
I fucking
for
love submarines, so that was a great movie.
You don't.
It's just the backdrop for the drama.
Right, well, but it also, you know, 95% of what is occurring in the show is some kind of football-related thing. So if you, I mean, I don't hate football, but... You know, I'm not that interested in football, and yet this is a great show. So it does go to show that it doesn't matter that it's 95% football.
It's super intriguing in the sense of, in the same way that documentaries are.
It is a documentary
about people
except
who are
scripted.
Hardcore about anything, right?
Yeah.
It's riveting the same way that Spellbound is riveting, mm-hmm. even though you don't give a shit about the spelling
no,
bee.
No, spelling bees are great.
To
that
these,
shit is tight.
To these people, it's their life.
Yeah.
And it
you
is,
should think that.
And because they care about it so much, you know, it. You know, even if you don't care about it at all, like, you do care about it in the context of
right.
being emotionally engaged in the film. So by the end, you know, you're on the edge of your seat about, like, who's going to fucking spell the next word right?
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, that's what Friday Night Lights yeah. does for me. You know, even if I'm not a crazy football fan,
yeah.
I think football's all right. But when I watch that show, it's fucking life to those people. So
right.
it's
and I mean that's like Josh said, it does feel like a documentary that's scripted
yes.
with, you know, actors, because it's shot in that style. And yeah, it's just it's really well done. It's really good, you know, human drama kind of thing. And yeah, it is sometimes unnerving how fucking important football is to this town and the people that's in it. Like, it is their lives, yeah. like, you know. And I'm just like, wow, how is this possible? How can you guys give a shit about football this much? But then, you know, the more you watch it, you're like, wow, this is all they have. This is it. You know, this is life and death, so.
I've mentioned it on the show before, but if you want to see the real-life version of Hard Knocks, or rather of...
Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights.
Watch Hard Knocks.
Watch Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Which is, it's literally a documentary about, I mean, it's about pro football, not high school football, but it's from what it sounds like, it's that show,
yeah.
right? It's, you know, human interest pieces cut together with practice and the process leading up, you know, training, it's training camp with a different NFL team every year.
Right.
And it's NFL films who are like the best goddamn documentary filmmakers anywhere. And yeah, it's that, and it is, as you say, very fascinating. You know, people. It is interesting to watch people who are hardcore about anything be hardcore about that thing. The Scrabble documentary Word Freaks is awesome.
Yes,
you know. Yeah.
Although, you know, on that note, I tried to watch the Helvetica documentary about the font.
Yeah, the typeface.
The font movie. And I was basically falling asleep like 15
minutes.
Oh, man,
I love that shit.
That shit was hella boring.
Oh, it's so good.
No, that shit was boring.
Typeface movie. I love it.
No, and I should have loved that. I should have loved that movie with all my heart, and yet it was not interesting. Those people were boring as fuck.
I'm a font slut, so I don't know, man.
I was not sold on that.
No. Yeah. Okay, so games. I just got Dishonored in the mail. From Gamefly, and we looked at the first like 10 minutes of it before the show.
I'm about to sum it up in two words. Dishonored, unrealistic locks.
Yeah, boat locks.
About misspelled locks.
Not as in key locks. Yeah, I can't believe none of the reviews have mentioned how unrealistic the boat locks are in the intro to this game.
It does not make
water
any
does
sense.
Not move that fast,
and there's no reason for it to be there. It should just be an elevator. You know, the boat doesn't go anywhere once it gets up to the top.
You know, we need to do more reviews on the first 5 minutes of games.
Yeah. So I can't really say what I really feel about it because I've barely played it and I barely got through the tutorial. So. More on that next week. But I did also play Mark of the Ninja. This is like the third podcast in a row we've mentioned this game. I love it. I actually bought the game, and I played through like about 4 or 5 levels of it. Unlike Josh, I am as enamored with it as Charles was.
Yeah, buddy.
It was definitely his enthusiasm that pushed me more into it to actually take another look, even though I love the demo. I don't want to talk too much about it because I feel like we should put it together all in the main topic.
Yes.
So... that's a good game. A couple of games I just want to mention, and then I'm done. Penny Arcade 3 finally came out for my platforms of choice, the Mac, Android, iOS. I played the first two on the Mac. I thought I was going to buy it on the Mac again, and then I realized that it was $2 cheaper on iOS, so I bought it there.
Except the controls probably shit.
The controls are fine, actually, because... trying to think why. Oh, you know,
it's
actually
not real time.
No. Several RPGs that I played recently, like I played the new Final Fantasy Dimensions, and there's this other one that I mentioned several times, Dragon Fantasy. They all use the same kind of on-screen. Like the D-pad is not always there. It's only there when you press and then hold like in a direction, and then when you lift off again, it disappears.
And is it there wherever you put your thumb down?
It's there wherever you put your thumb
okay,
down.
Okay, that's pretty well executed.
So that's genius. So it doesn't cover up the screen.
Even on the
it's
phone?
Wherever you want it. Phone or iPad. I'm playing on the iPad, but yeah. So that's fine. Control is fine. Although, I have to say, I'm kind of disappointed in it. I really think the style of the first two games was better.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what this was going into it. I knew it was like old school 16-bit, you know, like Final Fantasy.
Fantasy Star kind of.
Yeah, kind of style. But the battles in the first two were way more entertaining, and they kept you on your toes. They were much more Super Mario RPG. You actually had to like pay attention and block and all that kind of stuff. And these battles are like as basic as they come. Like they stripped out all of the cool stuff that were in the first two and made like the most mediocre battle system ever, which is not the whole game. I mean, the writing is still superb. I love the story. I love all the descriptions, all the dialogue between characters. That's top-notch, and that's why you're playing it.
Yeah.
But I'm really disappointed that they got rid of the really interesting battle style, which I you know, was really pumped about before.
Do you do the Final Fantasy 1 or 30-second hero or whatever thing where you just, like, hold down A and you watch it go through, attack that guy,
you can't even do
guy.
That. That's how bad it is. You have to tap on either fight, magic, item, defend, whatever, and then you have to tap on the enemy. You can't just hold down tap and it chooses everything like a normal effect. It's not even that good.
So like I said, I think it's bad control on iOS. I think it's probably better with an A button.
Well, I mean, that's annoying, but the fact that the battles are so basic and anemic are really my point. Like, that would be
is
bad
that
even
because
on,
you're not that
on...
far in it, and maybe they're going to add in some difficulty or layers or anything?
I don't know, maybe, but I mean, the first two had that level of interaction from the first battle.
Do you have to manage magic points?
You get magic points, like, as you fight. Like, it kind of just, like, builds, and once you have enough, it's sort of like an active time
like,
bar.
Like a burst meter.
Yeah, then you can use a magic attack. And, I mean, that's fine, but I don't know. I really miss... I miss the fact that you can time to defend, and you can time to hit, like, for extra points.
Yeah.
And I miss the descriptions of the enemy's attacks, which were funny and interesting. And now it's literally just, like, you swipe and some weird little graphical effect hits hits them.
The attack animation.
It's just...
Do you replenish health after each fight?
You do replenish health, thank God.
But there is no MP. There's just HP.
NP?
Magic points.
No, there's MP. Well, yeah, but it's not replenished. It builds in every battle, so you always start at like one.
Does
at
each
every
character
battle.
Have some kind of different? Like,
they all have different. They
or
have
mechanic.
Different specializations, and there are classes, and you can change classes. So I'm looking forward to doing that, like a job system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't do that at the beginning. I'm only like maybe 15 minutes in, so
yeah. Hopefully, it gets better.
It will get better, but the basic combat is really disappointing, and I don't know why they did that. Anyway, and one other game on iOS Universal is Punch Fucking Quest.
Punch Quest.
It's not called Punch Fucking Quest.
Oh, but it should. That's the subtitle that they couldn't put in there because otherwise they wouldn't get accepted in the App Store. So Punch Quest is the second now Infinite Runner that I love besides Tiny Wings. It does everything that an Infinite Runner does. It's as shallow as any Infinite Runner, but besides that, like it doesn't have no hit kill. It doesn't have any one hit kills. You have several like hearts. You can even get energy back by getting food as you're playing. There's progress. You get experience. You get to unlock things. You know, it's a badass kind of idea. You just punch monsters and you uppercut them, and you get special moves that do even more damage, and you know, explosions and. You know, so the gameplay is just fun. Immediately, you immediately feel awesome. Like there's no only after you've been playing for 5 minutes that you get awesome. You are basically awesome immediately. And there's even choices in the track, which is not necessarily unique, but, you know, you can go to a specific track that's more treasure or more fighting or like a question mark or because you don't, you know, it's random or more traps. There are eggs that you can hit that either turn you into a gnome that does this weird rainbow rolling effect, or you get to jump on a raptor and shoot lasers out of your mouth at flying triceratops
heads. It's called the laser raptor.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, the laser raptor. Yeah. So it's over the top. It's crazy over the top, and it does everything that I want Infinite Runner to do, and fuck all other Infinite Runners. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, that game's pretty good. I was not super enthused. I played it for one playthrough, like one life's worth, and I was like, this is dumb, and then I played it again a couple more times. I'm like, this is not that dumb, it's pretty good. So
yeah, I mean, if you're turned off
it
by
twice.
Did you ever get to that point in Super Crate Box?
I I've only played Super Crate Box when I played it on your thing. Now I've thought about Super Crate Box a little bit, and what I realized is that I totally appreciate why you love it. The super tight controls and gaining mastery over that system, I see, can be completely rewarding. In the same way I find it rewarding to master a game like Lumines, but it doesn't appeal to me personally as something that I want to master. Like, improving that skill set and getting better at Super Crate Box is something that just personally is like, neither here nor there. I could have fun doing it, but there's other stuff I want to do more. But I absolutely understand why it would be fun to, you know, get good with all 50 weapons and make a lot of progress in. Yeah.
Super Crate Box. Don't play it on iOS. Yeah.
Super Crate Box, the reason to buy a Vita.
Right.
It's also free on Steam.
Or free on Steam.
How's the spider situation going?
You know, I'm still on Spider Watch.
Spider Watch 2012. Josh is going to protect
Josh
us.
Josh in Spider Copter 5.
No spiders apparently incoming, but we know they're out there.
Are you checking the ceiling? I haven't been watching you look at the ceiling, because that's where they're coming from.
Well, I don't know, man.
That little sprinkler head thing.
They're in,
I mean,
your vent?
We have ants in the walls. They come out every once in a while, so I'm not surprised the spider got in.
Bastards.
Anyway. All right, so that's basically what I've done. So, speaking of Mark of the Ninja and Dishonored and other games, this week we're going to talk about stealth games. Stealth games, those games where I started to sum it up earlier in IM, where I said that I think of a stealth game as any game where there is a path to success that involves a non-direct...
like a non-confrontational...
Yeah, a non-confrontational path with enemies. Like you can win the game by either avoiding enemies or indirectly engaging them. Like, not directly fighting, they see you attack, and there's a battle, but, you know, using traps or using things to sneak around or you know, what's the word... you know, you point their direction and or their attention in a different direction, and you go the other way. You know, misdirection, yeah, distractions, misdirections, traps, stuff like that. So that's what I think. Some games are all about that. Some games just have parts of that to them. So I just want to start off the conversation with, I think in general I like stealth games. I think I'm not sure that I love games that just have stealth paths,
mm-hmm.
but are not necessarily meant to be played totally stealthy,
mm-hmm.
because I find that if the game gives you an advantage to playing Rambo style,
mm-hmm.
I will get bored with stealthing and Rambo it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the game has to really make it disadvantageous to Rambo for me to not do that and to even more enjoy it more. Just for example, Mark of the Ninja, you can go either way. I'm currently playing it.
You can't.
Well, you. What do you mean you can't?
Like, you can't go full force and just fucking murder everyone running through it. Like, you can't get spotted or else you die, like, immediately.
That's not true, but the game is definitely meant for you to not do that.
So when you're on alert and it's like 10 seconds of alert,
mm-hmm.
you're telling me you could run towards a guy and kill him, like, yeah. via any method?
I do it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can go and if a guy is alerted to you, if you're close enough and can get to him before he shoots you, you can punch and kick and kind of, you hit him enough, you can like knock him over and then kill him. But at that point, you have to kill him.
Yeah. Right?
You can't.
Well, or you
can run away.
You can hide, and if you get into a hidey spot, they'll eventually stop looking for you.
Yeah.
But no, that's what I'm doing right now. I fucking triple arms all the time and kill dudes and then go back to hiding again.
Interesting.
I don't do that at all.
Right.
When I played through, I totally did not do that.
It feels wrong, though. It feels like I'm a bad player. Wrong.
I got shot so fast when the alarm went off. I was like, oh, when the alarm goes off, you have no option but to run away and hide.
You have a little snap moment where you can do an attack.
If you're like standing on top of him and the alarm goes off, then
you can like jump.
You can
right?
still.
Yeah, no, I jump. I mean, they point the laser at you. You jump through the laser behind them. You attack them enough times. They eventually fall over. You stab them on the ground and then you move on.
Yeah, I should have tried that a little
more.
And
you get the peasant's kill.
Yeah, you get, which is the best kill is they don't see you and you do the QTE. correctly, or they don't see you, you do the QTE wrong, you get fewer points, or they see you and you kill them and you get the least points, or you die and you get no points.
Or you don't kill them at all.
Or you don't get a call, which is the same as killing them after you've alarmed them in terms of points.
Well, in terms of points for that dude, but then you get 5,000 points at the end of the level.
Right, right. Yeah. So obviously that they are encouraging you to not be spotted, yes.
Or you get no points for not playing at all.
Right, true.
True. But then you don't even care about points. So, anyway, I like that game. I'm not doing a very
points
good job.
Points must go up.
I'm not doing a very good job of being stealthy, but I do want to just get through the game to beat it, and then I am planning on going back to be super stealthy and not fuck up.
So I found that game rewarding in both ways. I mm-hmm. find it rewarding. So I never played it through where I was just like, fuck it, I don't even care if I get seen. I was either going like stealth mode or super ultra stealth mode, those two being stealth mode, but I'm killing guys, so I'm doing the stealth kills and trying to do the quick time events correctly, etc. And you actually have a fairly long, you don't have to do that right away, you have a good second to get it right, to look at the direction of the arrow and get mm-hmm. that QTE right. Anyway, so either doing that, doing the kills, the game is far easier when you're doing the kills and hiding bodies and getting them out of the way.
Right.
You can make your life a lot easier by doing that. Or the super ultra stealth mode, which is nobody ever noticed me. I didn't kill anyone. I got in and out. And I got to say, doing complete levels that way is like just one of the most satisfying gaming experiences I've had in definitely this year. And really for a couple years, I just found it so rewarding to have, you know, just been the ninja guy, right? Got in, got out. No one ever knew what was there. I completely accomplished every objective, and like you just perfect the mission. It's so much fun. I really like that aspect because, you know, as I said when I originally talked so effusively about it, it's really a puzzle game at that point. You know,
yeah,
it's not an action game at all.
I just wanted to quickly say,
which means it's super slow, right?
Right.
I mean, that is
it's
one
methodical.
Thing. That is one thing about stealth games is they tend to be very slowly paced.
Right.
You know?
And that's why I was saying that it does not let you Rambo, which is why I don't do that. Like I didn't mean to misrepresent my style. I'm not trying to Rambo it and then saying, oh, sure you can Rambo it, Josh. I'm more saying I'm trying to be good and stealth, but I suck and I still fuck up, but that doesn't ruin the level. I mean, I can still move past that, which I think is a fine compromise, you know.
So in this conversation generally about stealthers, I posit that stealthers mostly suck. So
now, is that also positing that there's a lot of them to even compare?
Rebut me and tell me the best stealthers ever.
Besides Mark of the Ninja?
Yes. Let's move on.
Okay, so other games, I don't know if Dishonored yet is, although lots of people have said that it's a good stealth
game. None of us have really played it a lot.
Right, so I'm hoping. So
I do have more to talk about Mark of the Ninja, but we can move on for now.
I think a quintessential stealth game would be Thief.
Yes, definitely.
It's a classic PC game. There's several sequels. Pretty much everybody agrees that as far as stealth games go, it's one of the better ones.
Yeah, I wasn't into that.
Okay, now tell us why you were not into Thief.
I tried it for like 5 minutes. It was really slow, and it was like, this is slow and boring.
Okay, so you deduced that a game sucked because you gave it 5 minutes and didn't like that it was slow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's... I'm going to rebut that by saying that's not a good reason to say that it sucks, except in your case.
That's a super old one.
Okay. And so yes. And so because it's old, that means it's not
fucking
worth...
Fucking Moby Dick is so old.
It's not worth using as an
that
example?
That shit is worthless.
Well, I mean, I was...
It's a classic.
Jeez, I was
it's
like...
a classic.
What was I, 20 when I tried that?
Okay, and Metal Gear Solid.
It was immediately after I had played Quake or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? Where's the shooting?
Yeah.
I was like, why am I on a roof?
There is shooting. You have water arrows. You have
I don't
to
know
shoot
about
torches
this.
Out.
I don't know.
So there's Metal Gear Solid. That's another quintessential
yep.
tactical espionage action game.
My favorite parts about Metal Gear Solid were the VR missions.
Which was like the epitome of being stealth, yes.
Yeah, but the game was so slow. And the story was good. The rumbling was good. Man, that was the first game with some sick ass rumble in your controller. Oh man, when that helicopter came down, your controller's like thum 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 thum. Do you guys remember that?
Like, DualShock was a thing.
That was right when DualShock came out. Yeah. And it was like a extra add-on controller you had to get even though you already had controllers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember that shit?
Vaguely. I mean, I remember Rumble controller,
That was huge.
I don't remember that specific instance, no.
That was a big deal to me. Some of those boss fights in that one of those first
Did you actually beat that game or get far into it?
Well, the first one, yeah.
Okay.
Metal Gear Solid 1, I guess.
Yeah. And did you like it?
Yeah, I guess I did.
I'll throw out I think Hitman and Splinter Cell, both also, I think, fairly well-regarded.
I never played them.
Oh, Tenchu Stealth Assassin. Have you heard of that?
I have, but I haven't played it.
Yeah. I have not played that, but there's a guy at my work. What up, Sebastian? Apparently, you like it's the epitome of the ultra slow pace. You like follow guys for hours before you can assassinate them in a way that where no one can see you. It's like, you know, another like ninja simulation.
That seems a little extreme.
Yeah, but it's like the. Taken to the nth degree in that very Japanese way where, yeah. Apparently it predates Metal Gear as the first 3D stealth game.
Oh, okay.
So, you remember
it's
how
also
you
Deus
said,
Ex? You sort of like Deus Ex.
Remember how you said you want to, you know, in order to be successful, you need to really penalize you for running and gunning? Man, I fucking hate the penalty for running and gunning, though. It's a delicate balance that needs to be had. If you penalize too much, like I feel like, you know, a lot of games do where like you get caught and it's like you might as well just restart. You know, that's what I don't like about those games. Maybe they should limit like your ability to restart or something. You know, like you need to be able to recover from a worst case scenario somehow and not by fucking running away and then watching a countdown timer while you're hiding for 60 seconds or whatever. That's so annoying. I don't know what the solution is.
So I think what you're hitting on is one of the main problems really with any game. It's breaking immersion, but in the stealth genre in particular, when that happens, it feels very gamey. The countdown timer feels super gamey. And
totally
so,
throws you out. It doesn't make any sense. Plus, it's boring.
Yeah.
And so, you in those games like Deus Ex, The way I played that was if I got spotted or whatever, I'd fucking reset. I'd quick load.
Mm-hmm.
And the games where I feel compelled to quick load constantly whenever I make mistakes, generally I think that's a flaw in game design.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't it also be a flaw? Well,
yes, it's a flaw in me personally, absolutely. But this is a personal experience, you know?
Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know, the stealth genre. It affords this perfectionism,
yeah.
But that perfectionism is also your undoing, if you follow it to the letter. Like, right. Oh, the best way to play this, quote unquote, is to never be spotted. So if I get spotted, fuck that, start over.
Reload,
like,
yeah,
I will do this until I never get spotted.
You know what I would even appreciate more, maybe, is when you get spotted, it literally gives you a game over screen, and then it becomes more like one of those action games where you just like Super Meat Boy, where I can put up with the death constantly. You know, I die, I try again, I die, I try again, I die, I try again. So then I'm successful.
If it's loading for you instead of you loading yourself.
Yeah, maybe that's the difference. Maybe I feel like it's a weird, like, throwing me out of, like you said, what's the right word? It's a
immersion breaking
experience. And yet, if it said, like, game over, you know,
you
need
spotted.
To stay stealthed,
yep.
Maybe that wouldn't be an immersion breaking experience.
So one of the things,
and I'd appreciate it more
in terms of breaking immersion. This is what I wanted to bring up about also about Mark and the Ninja that I think it does really well. It does suffer from the countdown timer. Like, you've been spotted. Mm-hmm. Let's wait 10 seconds. You know, hide and wait 10 seconds.
Yeah, and 10 seconds is the most hilarious timer ever.
Yeah, it's,
right. Because even
if you do a minute or like 5 minutes, something realistic for somebody to kind of say like, oh, I really was wrong. I didn't see anything. My mind was playing tricks on me. Then the game is unplayable. If you have to wait 5 minutes.
Traditionally, Metal Gear Solids have been like that. You have to wait a shit long time, don't you? It's closer
but
to
it's
like
never,
30 to 60
like
seconds
60
or something.
Seconds,
yeah.
Yeah.
But even that is not long enough for a real guard in the real world to go like, oh, I guess I didn't see that guy who I just saw, right?
Who I've seen several times as he's running away from me.
So,
but at least
there's no way to
if,
ever make it realistic.
At least
10
it's
seconds,
long enough, though, that you feel like you're hiding and you're like, I hope they don't find me in this hiding spot. Whereas in Mark of the Ninja, it's like, I just need to get out of line of sight.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
it's, you know, I think the choice is intentional, and it's like, we're going to prioritize making the game fun, and we're going to say, you know, that 10 seconds that you wait in game time is the equivalent of the 45 minutes that it actually would have had to be if you were a real ninja, right? So I think that's a problem. I do think that that's not an elegant way to handle it.
We should talk to some real ninjas and see how they feel about the game.
Maybe there are better ways to do it. But
I solved it again.
Okay, solve it.
This is a brainstorming session for me. I'm just coming up with ideas left and right.
Bam!
Bam, 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 to fix these fucking games. Okay, here you go. In the stealth game, when you get spotted, you have to, they fucking chase the shit out of you. And you need to hide in a really good hiding spot, right? And then when you get there, you see, like, time passing very, very quickly. Like, it does, like, a braid thing where it's like, you know, found a safe spot. And then it, like, 30 minutes pass in, like, super fast slow-mo, you know, stop motion.
Time-lapse.
Stop motion. And it takes like 5 seconds and it does a sweet ass animation because you're in like a safe spot.
Uh-huh.
You know, you see the guys go back and forth with their flashlights like right over you and you're like,
right.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, that's good.
That's awesome.
So basically, you're saying that your imagination is not as good as that.
Yes.
Because you just described exactly what they do, only with an animation.
I need game jingles and I need the mechanic to like, yeah, I need to stay in immersion. Yeah. I need those things.
I don't know. I kind of feel like that.
It makes sense.
You would adapt to that and you'd still think it was silly after a few times.
Does that or does that not make sense? More sense.
I'm willing to
speeding up time makes more sense than not speeding up time. I don't know.
I'm willing to suspend my disbelief and just go with like the 10 seconds.
Yeah,
is
I'm fine within 10 seconds.
That's happening, right? I'm just going like, okay, that's what's happening right now. You know, they're doing their thing looking for me and they didn't find me. Now I can continue playing. I'm fine with that concession. You know, immersion breaking and gamey as it may be, I think it makes it for a more fun play experience. So, you know, I think what you have described is interesting. I'd like to see it implemented. It would be cool to see.
Or after being spotted once, they don't return to their same dumb, like, I'm going to face my back towards this darkness, like, situation. from then on, permanently, they're in like a different patrol. Mm-hmm. They like they talk to their guys on radios, and they're like, "Fucking, let's patrol this other area a little differently." And maybe that becomes part of the puzzle.
Yeah,
where you have to intentionally get spotted once or twice in some weird areas, so that then they patrol different areas so that you can seek around a different way.
I like that idea a lot.
That's I like that idea a lot too.
Either both are great ideas.
Doesn't Deus Ex sort of do that? Like, I don't think they necessarily go right back to where they were patrolling. Like, they, I don't remember, but don't you're right. They should all do that.
Correct. You are correct.
I think they should all
in
do
Deus
that.
In Deus Ex, I actually did, like, run around and try to half get spotted.
Yeah.
But then I found it was more efficient to just throw boxes.
So wait. You were going to say something. Yeah, Mark and the Ninja. Yeah. One of the things that I think that it does really well and don't, you know, it avoids the kind of immersion-breaking issues that happen with other lots of other stealth games, are that it's incredibly minimal use of HUD and just the really subtle things that it does on screen to indicate the amount of like your visibility, in particular the degree to which you are hidden is very elegantly handled just with the lighting and how visible your character is, right? Your character is immediately visible and apparent on the screen, whether you're hidden or not. Like, you can really, you know where you are at all times. You're never like looking for yourself or completely shrouded in darkness. You can always see your avatar on screen. However, when you're illuminated, you the rendering of your character is very different. Fully colored, you know, saturated version of yourself where, you know, the blue of your tunic stands out as blue, right? And when you're not in a path of light, then that looks, you know, much blacker, and, you know, you have these kind of more ghostly outlines, etc. I think it's just a very elegant way to handle that, as opposed to the kind just like slapping up a button on the screen that says stealth mode. You know what I mean? Like an icon that appears on the HUD, which other games are definitely guilty of, right? It's like the throwing up the thing that says crouch. Like, you're crouching now, and once you're not crouching anymore, then you'll make sounds. And the way that you know that is that we put up a thing on the screen, right?
In theory, I agree with you. It seems like a cool thing, except, you know, when I saw it, I didn't really like it. You know, there's this lamp, and it has like a perfect like angle to, you know, exactly where the lamp is pointing. Mm-hmm. And when you are 1 centimeter, you know, to the side of it, you are completely like black. You're just like virtually invisible.
Yep.
And you step like a half a step sideways, and all of a sudden you're like brightly lit from head to toe in blue.
Yep.
And it was such a dramatic change. It didn't make sense to me. I wanted to see just my foot light up.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to see it like right where that angle was, see half your body lit up or
that
something.
That would be cool.
You know, I needed some kind of transition.
TLC, man. They'll have that
for it to
patch.
Make a little more
it is
sense.
One dude.
It was a little immersion breaking for
it's
me.
It's a dude it making was, that game.
No, it's
so,
a great
like,
concept. So,
yeah, I'm willing to forgive it that flaw. That would be sweet. And, you know, a more gradual transition and somebody being, you know, I think the issue with that is a gameplay one where if just your foot is illuminated, you know
it could glow a little extra or something,
but do dudes see you? Like that raises the gameplay issue. Like when
dudes,
if it's a transition
when
then,
dudes see foot, you know, they're like, what was that? You know, when dudes see a whole half a body and they're like positive that was a pair of legs and a ninja outfit,
mm-hmm.
then they're like, that was a dude, let's go after him. They chase you.
Yeah. So the guy who made Mark of the Ninja, Nils Anderson, I mentioned this to you both, that on this other terrible podcast, Experience Points, which I bring up every now and then just to so you know how bad it is, they had an interview with him, and it was a really good interview, and he brought up several points about the game that I think can just be used across stealth games in general. The one that we're talking about sort of sidestepping around is sort of like the difference between 2D and 3D,
mm-hmm.
and he was mentioning how I think his original idea was to maybe do 3D, but it was just, you know, an easier choice to go with 2D,
yeah.
And it also was just a more focused effort so that they could do what they wanted to do. He brought up an interesting point about how 2D games are inherently unnatural to play, because the world is not 2D. And so you're immediately kind of suspending your disbelief, even playing a 2D game at all. And things like the foot versus body lighting issue, or the 10-second counter unrealistic time frame, you know, make it really gamey. But it's almost like an artifact of the style, that a 2D platformer is inherently odd, and you're already thinking, you're already in game mode when you see a 2D game, because it's not trying to simulate real life at all. Whereas a game like Deus Ex or Dishonored or Thief, you know, is played from a first person perspective, and it's in 3D, and there are things to consider that you wouldn't normally consider. You know, that there's a heightened realism that, I don't know, I think you bring different expectations to the game depending on whether it's 2D or 3D. And anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing that he brought up.
No, I mean, I think it's definitely, you know, aside from just the obvious, you know, effort, increased level of effort modeling 2D, or rather modeling 3D, you know, game resources. But aside from all that, I think it's much harder to design a stealth system that works in 3D.
Yeah.
You know, clearly that's like an order of magnitude more difficult than doing a 2D one.
One of the things that I noticed when I booted up Dishonored was the difficulty level. So it has easy, normal, hard, and very hard, and it defaults to normal. I looked to see what hard and very hard meant to Dishonored, and it apparently means basically the same thing that it does in pretty much every FPS, which is, you know, you're more vulnerable and your enemies are more accurate, or they have more health, so it's harder to kill them. Something Nels brought up in the interview was that in making stealth challenging, he doesn't think that's a good way to make a stealth game more challenging. You know, it's not a, because the whole crux of a stealth game is that there's this system that's occurring. There's this world with people, and they're sort of, you know, automatons doing their thing. Your whole deal is to avoid that, is to basically skirt this system. Mm-hmm. Like, the system being aware of you is like a mistake, you know? And so you can't make a stealth game harder by giving the enemies more HP, or by making them more powerful, you know, because that's not what it's about. You know, it's sort of binary. If they see you, you fucked up. And, you know, game, like you said, like Josh said, in general, the game is pretty over. It's, you're, you know, it's not the right way to play. And, you know, you should try not to do that. But instead, you should change their behavior, you know, having them, you know, maybe instead of going back to their post after 10 seconds, yes, now they're on a new post, you know, that that makes it more challenging, or giving them more abilities, or making them more likely to see you for doing certain things.
So does it have difficulty levels that do those things?
On Mark of the Ninja?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it have?
I was just trying to think of that, and I can't recall choosing a difficulty level
I mean, I don't know why he would bring that up if it didn't.
Yeah, but I assume I didn't it would. See it.
But I mean, that could have been something that he realized after putting that game out, or they just were unable to do, you know, in time or whatever.
I don't think so, but I really can't corroborate it because, yeah, I haven't looked.
I don't recall choosing a difficulty.
Well, regardless, I think it's an interesting point and makes sense. Let's see. He also brought up something about shorter levels versus fewer longer levels. Because initially the idea for the game was to have about 60 levels that were really short, and instead they ended up going with about 12 levels that are really long. And I don't know, what do you guys think about that in terms of a stealth game?
I disagree. I think the levels are too long.
Why is that?
I don't know. I wanted more. I think more shorter levels is better.
You want challenge rooms from...
You want VR missions?
Yeah, you want VR missions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but is that just because you get bored being on the same level or
like
something?
No, it's because like we talked about, like getting spotted is a failure. You know, if you have a 15-minute session, you know, where you could make a failure in minute 14, it's fucking annoying to lose those 14 minutes and have to reset.
But you don't have that in Mark of the Ninja. Mark of the Ninja has excellent checkpointing. You just go back to your checkpoint and you're fine.
Yeah. So it's sort of like small rooms.
Can you reset to checkpoint?
Yeah, just kill yourself.
If you get noticed, basically what would happen is if I made the mistake and got noticed, I would just stand there, get shot, and restart at the checkpoint immediately and continue.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay, it does a load. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the load is like... It's a fast, it's like
but
a
I'm
trials
saying,
load,
I'm
right?
Saying
it's
like it loads, right, it doesn't penalize you for that failure. You literally reset.
Yeah, and you're not managing the save yourself. Like, at no point do you go to a menu and save the game.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. say what else.
I personally really liked the length of the levels. It made it feel like you're really accomplishing something to me.
A little more epic in stature.
Yeah, it made you feel like you're really getting somewhere. You're doing some ninja ass ninja shit, and you put one over on 300 guys instead of 5 in one room. You know.
Yeah.
I found it more satisfying.
I mean, I think that's just like a basic awesomeness about stealth games that. You know, if you are good at them and you play them well, you know, whenever you beat a section, you feel incredibly badass in a completely different way than you do if you Ramboed it, you know? Because I've played lots of games where I Rambo the shit out of it. Like, that was another interesting thing he was saying about how a stealth game is like this self-running, user-driven experience where mm-hmm. there's this system and you're interacting with it and it's all about experimenting and trying to figure out ways to work the system as opposed to a normal side scroller where the whole level is at odds with you and trying to kill you. You know, right. Enemies are running after you and attacking you and you have to combat them. Whereas a stealth game, like if you're good, you literally never interact with anything. You know, you skirt the whole system. And yeah, you feel incredibly badass. Like, you pulled one over on the game, like, ha-ha, mm-hmm. you know. You didn't even see me. I went through the whole thing, you know. So that's a really interesting interesting concept, I guess.
The stealth games are what they are. Like, nobody loves Deus Ex because the original I'm talking about, like the Statue of Liberty original Deus Ex, that game is considered a classic not because of its shooter mechanics, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can play that game Rambo style and you can get guns, but it's like just a totally mediocre shooter. And if you're going to play a shooter of that era, you should go just get, you know, Quake, right? Or Quake 2, I guess, would be, you know, that era. So it's not good because it's not considered a classic because of it, of playing it as a shooter. It's considered a classic because of the people who played it for a stealth game. And right. it's that part of it that makes you feel incredible and makes you love a game. It's not the real, like, you know, I don't think anybody's going to consider, what's the Dick Tits game? What was that game? Bulletstorm. Nobody's going to consider, well, what else do you know it's for, right? You think Bulletstorm, you think Dick Tits. That's, yeah.
Fair enough.
Anyway, people are not going to call that a classic in 10 years from now, right? People, you may remember it because of Dick Tits, but it's not going to be considered a classic game. You run through rooms and you shoot everything. Like, meh.
Well, people remember that old Atari Chestnut, was it Custard's Last Stand for both dicks and tits? Yes, so
it's not Custard, it's Custer.
Sorry, Custer. Yes. My bad.
Super racist Custer's Last Stand. Incredibly racist and distasteful in every way.
Yep. And yet people keep talking about it.
Bulletstorm got good fucking reviews, man.
It certainly did.
I know you hate it, but I think there's a lot of fans.
There are a lot of fans. I don't think anybody's going to call it a classic.
I think the fans would. I think, you know, it got great reviews. What do you need to become a classic? Besides
won't know for time. You know, we will only know in the fullness of time. So we can't exactly have that argument. I don't feel like it's going to be revered in the same way that Deus Ex is now. Obviously, we can't know. It may well be. I could well be proved wrong.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed multiplayer, which is, the only sneak multiplayer that I even know of.
It is the only one that I could think of that was a multiplayer example of a stealth. I can't think of any other stealth multiplayer. You know, there is one that was sort of close to that, which was like a cross-play. There was a game that came out where people's single player games, you could join as a multiplayer. You could join in a multiplayer, like server browser mode, a person's single player playthrough and play as a mob against them. And so it was kind of like multiplayer.
But how's that stealth?
Stealthy. I don't know.
Well, a few games kind of do that, but yeah. I wouldn't call them stealthy. Like Left 4 Dead, when you play multiplayer, it's not like head-to-head shoot each other.
Uh-huh.
It's like one team is temporarily all the fucking zombies.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's all the elite zombies. And just trying to prevent the other team from proceeding through the scenario.
Yeah.
And then you swap.
I'm not sure there's anything stealthy about zombies.
You're right.
Though.
I don't know why I brought up that. Forget that I said that. You're right. That's not stealthy. So Assassin's Creed multiplayer is... it was a total revelation for me when it came... that's dumb. There is actually an Assassin's Creed
Revelations. No, I like that, though. No, that was good. Go with it.
that was... subconscious level there. That was a very interesting thing that came out. I think it was in Brotherhood that first happened.
Did they evolve in Revelation, and then is it evolved again in whatever three?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's in three. I don't know for certain, but I don't see why it wouldn't be. I think it's such a unique experience. So the way it works is, there are a number of variations on this theme, but roughly speaking, the lore of Assassin's Creed is that in the future, people can get into this machine and relive their past lives. And if your past lives included you being a sweet-ass assassin, then you can go back and
sweet-ass assassin?
Yeah, relive those experiences. And so it's the Assassin versus the Templar across history, you know, there's sort of an Illuminati angle, whatever. There's a training program where the Templar trainees, in order to, you know, be able to use this system better, ostensibly are engaging in this training activity, which is the multiplayer, which is to say that you are put into a system. You know, one of the great things about Assassin's Creed is the crowd system. They have this really cool crowd tech where they can introduce lots of NPC characters and they all interact and move around each other and flow as if they were a real crowd of people walking around. And your goal as a player in this world is to act as much like a computer NPC as possible, right? Be as unobtrusive and stealthy as possible. It's not stealth in the sense of, you know, hiding in shadows, but more in the sense of misdirection or just being unnoticed. And it's just a very interesting challenge. So you know you can blend in with crowds of people. You can, you know, walk around, stop, you know, maneuver as much as possible like a computer controlled character, all the while attempting to track down a target that you have, and also all the while being hunted by somebody else who has you as a target. And the better you do, the more people are hunting you, and so it kind of, you know, balances out good players by assigning many people. You know, the moment you're discovered, then all of a sudden everybody has you, you know, pointed out on your mini map. If you do something like very obvious, like climb up to the roof of a building or something like that. So it's just a very fascinating, system. Yeah. It's totally unique. I don't know any other game that did it. And I got really into the multiplayer in Brotherhood, and I ended up not playing a ton of it in Revelations just because I think I just got on some other games at that point. But,
It's totally the kind of thing that I respect the hell out of and think is really genius. And yet just don't have the patience for. And that's the problem with most stealth games is that you have to be a patient person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do with Mark of the Ninja, except I still get spotted all the time. Then other times, like in Fallout 3 or Morrowind Oblivion, you know, some of them, they have quest lines where you have to be sneaky and stealthy and mm-hmm. not necessarily, you know, or you can play that kind of character. And I like to start playing that way, but I almost always just give up because it's faster and easier to just blow everything away. And I know it's just because I'm not a patient person. You know?
Now, I played Fallout 3 super stealthy. I played it stealth melee, and that was a really fun way to play that game.
How you were able to do that for so long.
I got the fucking chameleon armor. I got, you know, the...
You have, 20,000 stealth boys? You just always stealth?
No, I had 99 stealth.
I leveled
the shit out of my stealth stat, and I got the highest. So I could sneak right up behind anybody, melee them. I found that really fun, and it's basically because I get scared playing the game, right? Like, I'm like, fuck, I got to do this in a way where I can, ensure that I am not going to be imperiled, right? So I play through to level up the abilities that mean I'm going to be the safest, right? So I tend to play those games in a conservative way. So I'm either sniper style or stealth style. Yeah.
I would tend to do the same thing, but in the opposite way, by becoming a tank.
Uh-huh.
You know, in Dark Souls or whatever, it's way more fun to be the tank than to snipe dudes.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing about Assassin's Creed is that I don't even think of that classically as a stealth game because it's so different than typical stealth games. And you know, when I was brainstorming earlier about what stealth games could do to improve, I realized Assassin's Creed does those things. You know, when you're in the campaign and you're out and about and you get spotted, all you have to do to get away from a dude, there's no timer. It's more like a hybrid with like a GTA cop threat level or whatever. Mm-hmm. But even more so than that, there's no timer. You pretty much, you get out of line of sight and then you get in like a hay bale or something.
Yep.
And you just wait a couple seconds for them to realize they've lost you.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get out, you're anonymous again.
Or you can blend in with a crowd.
Yeah.
Right?
But you have to be out of line of sight.
Yes.
And then blend in with the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a relatively instant thing, but not without a timer, and it doesn't break immersion. It feels relatively believable. Even
the failure state.
Obviously, your costume is a little more egregious, you know.
Yeah.
But if you assume you were wearing something that blends in a little more, it keeps immersion and it's very fast. So Assassin's Creed doesn't play slow like most stealthers. Like it plays real fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good game.
It's interesting you bring that up. The GTA, you know, get away from cops whole trope. Because when I was playing Sleeping Dogs, you know, I hadn't really dealt with that whole, you know, okay, because there's so many missions in Sleeping Dogs. There's like, get away from the cops or lose the cops or something like that, and you just drive and try to, you know, turn enough times to where they can't catch up to you. And you want to talk about immersion breaking. The driving in that game is not immersion breaking. What's immersion breaking is, you know, this radius of presence of cop.
Right. Yeah.
And you just barely get beyond that, and somehow
a meter starts tracking down.
Like, oh, well, I guess we lost him. Now that he's 21 feet in front of us, we can't see him anymore. I guess we lost him. I mean, that's immersion breaking. Or even more immersion breaking is, like, you do a huge story. This is sort of off topic, but you do a huge story mission where you just had an epic battle with, like, the bad guys, and then you can still, like, call up the girl that you haven't romanced and say, like, the guy who wants you to steal cars and, like, dude, Trang, I'm bored as fuck. Give me a car to go steal. And I'm like, dude, you just had a crazy emotional, dramatic, epic battle with, like, these rival triads. Why are you still stealing cars? Why is that even a mission, you know, to accept? Mm-hmm. Like, would it really be that hard for them to, like, okay, after a certain point, you stop doing the bullshit missions because they don't make any sense anymore, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, they make little sense even before that, but they really take you out of the game afterward. Yeah.
So that's kind of a different issue.
That's
the radius of awareness of a guy or a police car on a map or anything. I mean, what we're talking about are game mechanics, right?
Yeah. Like, it gets gamey really quickly.
The game has to have, I mean, ultimately, this shit is binary, right? It's a computer algorithm, and at some base level, it's a one or a zero.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah, it's a problem. Like, you want those elegant solutions. You want to be able to stick just a foot and then a leg into the glowing cone of light.
You want it to be more analog, less digital.
Yeah. And that is what good game design is. And so, you know, maybe as with escort missions, stealth games are hard to do right and easy to kind of screw up and make annoying.
And they also seem to be less good when they're thrown into a game as a mechanic rather than built around it.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, when it's just like, okay, this is the stealth mission.
Right.
Of whatever other, you know,
yeah, we had to throw this in for variety, you know. I wanted to mention one more game, though, that I feel needs to be brought up if we're going to be talking about classic stealth games. Of course, Josh, you know what I'm going to bring up.
Nope.
Sneak King.
Oh, Sneak King. Oh, you reminded me. I love stealth games.
I mean, what better way to be a stealth game than to dress like the Burger King and surprise people with fast food?
Fucking croissant witches out of bushes.
I mean, I think we can all agree that's easily the best stealth game ever.
Oh, man, Sneak King.
That is the best game ever.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke.
BGE of the week.
Oh, you know, I was going to do a best game ever on Lego games, but fuck it. Sneak King.
Sneak King.
All right, is it in?
Sneak King, for sure.
It's a unanimous vote. Sneak King. All right.
Advergaming is at its finest.
Yes. Okay. Well, I don't know. Do you guys have any closing thoughts on stealth games? Do you like stealth games? Do you want to see more stealth games, or do you think it's too flawed to really spend a lot of time on?
I think Assassin's Creed does it right.
So more Assassin's Creed?
More Assassin's Creed style. Yeah.
What about you, Charles?
I fucking love Assassin's Creed.
Do you like it more than Mark and Ninja?
Yes, but basically because I think Mark of the Ninja is a better stealth game. I think Assassin's Creed is a better game overall because it's fucking given me, I don't know, like, you know, 200 hours of rad, you know, gameplay and Ratitude. Multiplayer. Yeah, so I'm in for that series. I want to see what happens plot-wise. I mean, it delivers more, although I will say Mark of the Ninja has an excellent single player, and the plot keeps going and going and going, and delivered a lot more than I thought it would. But anyway.
Sorry to nitpick.
Yes.
But 200? Jesus Christ. Those games are only like 20 hours or less
each.
Well,
they're 20
hours
each.
You played three of them, right?
I played three of them, and
so
I played...
So 60, and then maybe 20 more hours of the multiplayer?
Yeah.
So maybe 80.
Okay, so 80. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, 80, 200, whatever.
I'm just checking, because I didn't play all of them. I just wanted to make sure they're all about the same length, etc.
You can... I really like
you,
Exhausted.
You think you maybe played them a little longer to 100% them?
I 100%ed 2 and Brotherhood.
Yeah, it'd probably take 30 hours.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to playing Dishonored. I hope it lives up to the rave reviews that it's been getting, and not the Penny Arcade reviews, which were actually kind of negative. So we'll see.
I hope Assassin's Creed 3, like, advances the main plot line.
Yeah.
Man.
Did you go back and watch the YouTubes? You should just watch the videos on the other.
You know
what?
When I'm expecting my game tomorrow night to have shipped, mm-hmm. and it doesn't because it's like a day late or whatever, mm-hmm. probably, then I'll watch all those YouTubes.
Yeah. It's worth doing. Just catch up that way. You don't really need to play them.
So basically, like, just the beginning and end, or just the end.
Just watch all the cutscenes. Just get the YouTubes of the cutscenes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to play one of those now, you may as well play Revelations.
No, I'm not going to play them.
Yeah.
No, they're too long.
Yeah. Yeah. Just watch the cutscenes and play 3.
So, stealth games. Sneaky.
I like them.
All right, everybody. That's our show. This has been The Escort Mission. You should check us out on the web. We're at theescortmission.com. Send us mail. Your thoughts on stealth games. Write them in invisible ink. Whatever you want to do.
Ah.
Mail at theescortmission.com. Go on Google+, Facebook, Twitter. We're all there. We try to keep those up to date when we've got new shows.
Send us mail.
Next week, if no one sends us mail, I'm just going to claim that they sent us stealth mail, and we actually got a ton of it.
Yeah. And then you'll get the song.
And you heard it here, folks, and nowhere else. DJ Max Technica Tune for Vita is postponed by a week or two.
Exclusive.
The U.S.'s only source of DJ Max news.
It did not come out last Friday, October 29th, as scheduled.
Get it together, people who make that game. All right. Thanks for joining us. I've been Mike. That's been Josh over there. And that's Chaz over there.
See you later.
We're out.
Spider Watch. Let's do it.